Hari Om to all of you. Some of you, I think, we all have all these copies of the prayer verse. Okay, thanks to Sister Shashi here, she typed up everything so that you can follow the prayers. There's the Krishna Arati, and then followed by the small prayer that Panditji does. And after that, he recites these verses from chapter 11, verses 36 to 44. So you can take your Gita book and follow. And then after that, we do the Guru Brahma and all the other prayers. So everything is mentioned here properly. Okay. So now last week, we have covered. Remember till where we have covered? Verse 19. Very good. We have covered until verse 19, chapter 1. So, what has happened so far? From these earlier verses, we have seen that the whole war is progressing very smoothly, that the Pandavas and the Kauravas are ready. But now, this particular verse number 20, there is a what we call a turning point verse. Something very different is going to happen now. So, how is this difference indicated in this verse 20? By the word Athaha. You see the word Athaha, which tells us that something very extraordinary is going to happen. So, you know, it's just like when you go to a movie, and supposing we take an example of the Jaws movie. You all have seen Jaws, right? So you have these people playing by the seashore, all the families, children, father, mother, they're having a very good time. There's very nice, pleasant music in the background, correct? Then suddenly what happens? Before the shark comes, dang, 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 you know something is going to happen. That means there's going to be a change from some pleasant to unpleasant. So, Vyasacharya, who wrote the Gita, unfortunately he didn't have musicians with him. Otherwise, he would have changed the tune also. So, what does he have? He has words. He has to play with words. So, he uses the word Athaha. So, what is the present situation? If you recall, the Kauravas have blown their conches, which means what?
They are ready for battle.
The Pandavas have responded by blowing their conches, which means we are also ready for battle. Which means what should happen now? Battle should start. So, in this verse number 20, line number 3, you see the word Shastra, Shastra Sampate Pravarte. Shastra means weapons. Pravarte means all the warriors now are preparing to launch their weapons. So, the person who's having the bow and arrow, he's keeping his arrow on the bow. The person who's got the sword, he's pulling out his sword. Everybody is ready. The war is going to start because they've blown their conches. There's basically nothing to do but start fighting. But now a thought comes in Arjuna's mind. And because of this thought, Vyasacharya puts in the word Athaha. Otherwise, what would have happened? Arjuna would have gone straight into battle. That means there wouldn't have been any Gita Upadesh. No dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. If Arjuna had gone into battle, there would be no Krishna-Arjuna dialogue. There would have been no Vyasacharya would not have written the Bhagavad Gita. Gita Ashram would not be conducting these Thursday classes. And you would not be sitting here listening to me. But all this has happened because of the word Athaha. So, what is this word Athaha? Now, some kind of thought comes into Arjuna's mind. So, some kind of thought comes into Arjuna's mind, and he feels that all the Kauravas and the supporters of the Kauravas who are assembled in front of him, they are very far away, he can't see them. Some thought comes in his mind that this is a terrible war, a lot of people are going to die, a lot of his people whom he grew up with, his teachers, his grandfather, etc., they all are going to perish in this war. So some thought comes into him, let me go and see who are the people there on the other side, right? So what does he do? He says, here Arjuna is addressed in verse number 20 by the word Kapitdvaja. So you see in line number 2, Arjuna's name is called Kapitdvaja. Kapitdvaja, Kapi is monkey, and Dwaja is flag. So Arjuna had this flag on his chariot which had the sign of a monkey, and this monkey is no other than our favorite monkey Hanuman, right? So the question is, what was Hanuman doing on his flag? There is a story in the Mahabharata that when the Pandavas were in exile for 12 years, Bhima, one of the Pandava brothers, met Hanuman and he requested him to come and support the Pandavas in battle. So Hanuman agreed and he said, I will come, and thus he was on Arjuna's flank. Obviously, the next question will be, how come Hanuman was there in Ramayana, right? Then how come now also in Mahabharata also he is there? With Rama also he was there, with Krishna also he is there. How come Hanuman is everywhere? So there are said to be 7 Chiranjeevis. Okay, Chiranjeevis. Chiranjeevis means those who cannot die, those who live forever. Through all the 4 Yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga, the 4 Yugas that we are going through right now, we are going through Kali Yuga. These 7 Chiranjeevis will never die. They will live throughout the 4 Yugas. And who are the Chiranjeevis? Ashwatthama is one, who was also there on the battlefield. Ashwatthama, son of Dronacharya. Another Chiranjeevi is Bali, the grandson of Prahlad, right? Grandson of Prahlad. Prahlad, I'm sure you all know, was the son of the demon Hiranyakashipu. Okay. Vyasa, the one who wrote the one who compiled the Vedas, the one who wrote Mahabharata, the one who wrote the Puranas, he is also another Chiranjeevi. Yuga after Yuga he comes. Hanuman is one. The other is Vibhishan. Vibhishan, do you all know who's Vibhishan? Among the 3 brothers, that is Ravan, Vibhishan and Kumbhakaran. Vibhishan was the one who was the most, divine, was the most sattvic one. Okay. Kripacharya is another one. Kripacharya also was here in the Mahabharata field. He was standing on the opposite side with the Kauravas. Then we have Parushurama, Kripacharya and Parushurama. Parushurama, you know, is one of the 10 avatars who comes with the axe. So Parush is the axe, Rama with the axe. So these are the 7 Chiranjeevis who never die, who are existing throughout all the yugas. So now, when Arjuna indicated that, you know, all the soldiers were preparing with their weapons, but Arjuna now is indicated to Krishna, and what does he do before he says anything? If you look at verse number 20, Vyavashtitan Drishtva. Drishtva means he saw from very far away that the Kauravas were assembled ready to fight. So what does he do now? In the 4th line of verse 20, Danur Udyamya. Danur is his bow. He takes up his bow, which indicates what? I am also ready to fight. He is not given up yet. He has not come to his sense of delusion yet. So he is very clear. He knows that the army is there on the opposite side. He has taken up his bow, indicating I am willing to fight. And what does he do now in verse number 21? So this is Sanjaya. He is relating the story. Okay, Sanjaya. So Sanjaya is saying, Arjuna addressed Krishna, Rishikesham Tada Vakyam. Rishikesham is no other than Krishna. Tada Vakyam means, this is what Arjuna said to Rishikesha. Vakyam means to say. So Arjuna now tells Krishna, and how is Krishna also addressed in this very verse 21? He is called Achyutya, Achyuta. Achyuta means one who cannot fall, one who cannot make any mistakes. Whatever he does, he will ensure that he does it in the proper way. So what is this message also telling us? What is this message also telling us? That why is Krishna called by this name, Achyuta? Because it means that even when we want to undertake anything in life, we should also surrender to Krishna, the infallible one, the one who cannot fail us. So we should also have surrender to this Krishna, who will not fail us. But that surrender must not be a half-hearted surrender, not sure, it must be a total surrender. So if there's total surrender, then Krishna will not fail us. So here, having addressed Krishna as Achyuta, he commands Krishna now. He says, Arjuna, watcher, you see the words now, Arjuna is taking over. He is saying to Krishna, Ratham Stapaya. Ratham is chariot. Stapaya means place my chariot. And where does he want his chariot to be placed? Senayor Ubhayor Madhye. This is a very important verse in the Gita. Senayor Ubhayor Madhye. Senayor means armies. Ubhayor means of the two, between the two. Madhye means in the center. So I want my chariot to be taken to the center of the two armies. And this is what Arjuna, he wants to see the armies up close. So what is the significance of this verse, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye, which is used thrice in the Bhagavad Gita? Once it has been used here in verse number 21, then again it will be used in this chapter 1 in verse 24. Same Senayor Ubhayor Madhye. When Krishna listens to Arjuna's command, obeys his command, and he takes a chariot and parks it in the middle of the two armies. So second time the word appears. The third time this same word appears, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye, is in chapter 10 verse 2. When Krishna delivers the whole dialogue of the Gita, where? In middle of the two armies. So why is this so significant? What is it telling us here? Three times this thing has been repeated in the Gita. So some message it is sending to us. What is it trying to tell us? This Senayor Ubhayor Madhye. What is it trying to tell us? Equal minded. Okay, you can look at it that way. But what Senayor Ubhayor Madhye here means that this whole Gita was given to Arjuna in the middle of a battlefield when all the armies were so busy preparing for a war. So you can imagine 4 million soldiers, the amount of noise, the amount of ruckus, the amount of sound that was going on. And in between all these disturbances, Krishna chose what? To give the Gita to Arjuna. So why did he choose why not choose a temple? Why not choose Gita Ashram? Why not choose some quiet place to give a very profound message to Arjuna? Why choose a battlefield? Life is a battle, isn't it? So with all these challenges that we have, that we have to understand how to acquire this knowledge and meet the challenges in life, right? So it is, this Gita is not spoken to somebody who is going to retire in the forest, but this Gita is for those who want to meet all the challenges in life. So there are so many what we call negative elements in us, isn't it? We have so many negative elements, and at the same time there are a lot of positive elements in us. So all these positive elements that we have, like humility, love, what we call attitude of service, etc. All these good qualities are in us. But the problem is, we have to fight one big enemy there. Who is the biggest enemy? The Pandavas represent the goodness in us. Yet they had to fight the biggest enemy. So who is representing the bad? Duryodhana is the personification of bad. So Duryodhana here represents, Dur means something which is difficult. Okay? Duryud, the word yud also comes here. It is the most difficult thing to fight. What is the most difficult thing to fight? Ego. So the good qualities want to come out. The good qualities want to exhibit themselves. but it is the ego that holds us back, right? And what is this ego? Duryodhan is a product of what? See, there's a lot of allegory in this chapter 1. Duryodhan represents the ego, but the ego is a product of what? Dhritarashtra wanted to fulfill through Duryodhan. So Dhritarashtra represents what? His father represents what? The deluded jiva, the ignorant jivas that we are. We are ignorant. We don't have this knowledge how to go through life. So although Dhritarashtra is depicted in the Bhagavad Gita as being born blind, the blindness reflects his ignorance. The blindness is pointing to us the ignorant state of Dhritarashtra. And who did Dhritarashtra marry? What did she do? Blindfolded herself, which means what? An ignorant person marrying a what? One who decided to blindfold herself indicates the mind which is blinded by all the negative impulses, desires. So here you have ignorance represented by Dhritarashtra marrying a mind which itself is filled of all the wrong desires. When ignorance and desires come together, what happens? What's the byproduct? Duryodhan, which is the ego. Which is the ego. So ignorance plus all the blind desires which are in us, which make us blind to the good path, the good things, the good things are waiting to fight here, but there is ignorance here. There is blindness due to all the desires. When you marry ignorance and blind desires together, you get the birth of a ego. And that is the battle which is going on in our senayor ubayor madhye. We are in the center. One side good, one side ignorance and desires. Right? That's why many people say, where is God?
In us.
In us. If God is in us, why can't we experience Him? Why can't we realize Him? Why we haven't reached the level yet? Because of ignorance and the desires. Together, a very potent force that keeps us, that is an obstacle in our spiritual journey. So Vyasacharya is writing this Mahabharata. Many people ask this question, that question. You know, while Krishna was giving 700 verses to Arjuna, what were the soldiers doing? 700 verses takes 2-3 hours to give, right? So what were the other soldiers doing that time? Having a picnic? See, so many questions we ask, but what we fail to see is the allegorical meaning that Vyasacharya is trying to tell us. We ask all these unnecessary questions, trying to question this, question that, but we miss out the real meaning, the essence of chapter 1, which is the allegory of our lives. So senayor ubayor madhye is nobody but us, right? They're trying to get out of this situation. And therefore, if you see Krishna in the chariot, one hand is doing what? Holding the reins and the whip to whip the horses. What is the other hand doing? Waving bye-bye to us. What is the other hand doing? What is this? Which is called the Chin Mudra, is correct. It is also known as the you all do this, right? When you sit down and meditation. Why do you do this? To show I'm meditating. So this is called the Jnana Mudra. Jnana Mudra. Okay, why is it the Jnana Mudra? This is the whole message of the Gita depicted in this one symbol. What is it? You have the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, which are part and parcel of our body, mind, as I explained to you, body, mind, consciousness. So you have the three gunas. So you have the body, the mind and the intellect, known as the BMI, right? This is our whole construction. In these three portions are the three gunas, which we are going to learn about in chapter 14. But just for your information now, they are called sattva, rajas and tamas. Now, therefore, these three fingers represent the three gunas. So, you can understand the thumb represents the divinity, the supreme. And the four finger, what you call it, the index finger. Index finger represents the jiva, that is us. So, there is Paramatma, there is jiva, which is us, and there is the three gunas. So, what is the whole process that the Bhagavad Gita is telling us? That process of spirituality is nothing but you detaching from the body-mind complex and attaching to the Paramatma. So there is detachment, attachment. Detachment, attachment. Right? We are also doing detachment, attachment. But how we are doing it? We are all doing detachment, attachment also. But how we are doing it? We are detaching from Paramatma and attaching to the body. So instead of going this way, we are going this way. You see? So, what Krishna is trying to send this message through, that one hand is whipping the horses and one hand is holding the Jnana Mudra, is what? Means what?
Krishna is not involved as a person.
Whipping the horses means what? Whipping them to action. So what is telling you the message? You have to do something. You have to do your action. That is karma yoga. So one message is telling you is you must do karma yoga, whipping the horses up to action. And this is Jnana Mudra, which means we have also to acquire knowledge. That is Jnana Yoga. So in chapter 3, Krishna will say, in verse 3, Lokesmin divida nishta pura prokta maya naga jnana yogena samkhyanam karma yogena yoginam. In this world, in this loka, I have given two parts to salvation. One is called Jnana Yoga and one is called Karma Yoga. Besides this, there are no other parts. There are only two parts. So we must learn what is Karma Yoga. We must learn what is this Jnana Yoga and put these two together and reach moksha. Right? So that's why the Gita also is divided in that way. Chapters 1 to 6 first teaches Karma Yoga. First you must learn action, because not everybody is ready for knowledge. Right? You tell everybody come. No, they are not ready. So start first by doing Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga is taught first in chapters 1 to 6. Then the next, so you remember the great saying Tattvamasi. You remember this saying?
Yes.
Have you all heard this? Tattvamasi. This Gita also is divided according to this Tattvamasi. So chapters 1 to 6 Karma Yoga means what Krishna is telling you, that Tvam, that means who?
We.
You and me, we. What have we got to do? What is our sadhana? What do you mean by Karma Yoga? That is selfless action. Karma is action. When you add the word yoga together with karma, means what? What is the word yoga? Every chapter is called yoga. Yoga means union with God. So, karma is action. Karma yoga means how can I use my action to unite with God? Or how can I do the good actions that progress me on the spiritual path? Okay? So that is Tvam. And then what are chapters 7 to 12 of Gita? They consist of Upasana Yoga. Upasana. Here in chapters 7 to 12, Krishna will tell you everything about Himself, God. He will tell you about creation. He will tell you what is the nature of God. So therefore, it refers to... So now you know about yourself. You know about God. Then obviously, what is the balance? Chapters 13 to 18, which talk about Jnana Yoga, which is Asi, which means what?
Union between
Tat and How do you unify this? How do you merge this? So that is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. That's why Krishna is both. He's giving Karma Yoga plus Jnana Yoga. So that's why we call him the Jnana Mudra. That's one Jnana Mudra is doing. So now, where does Arjuna want the chariot placed? He has addressed Krishna. He says, take my chariot to the between the two armies. So he says, Yavat etan nirikshe aham. Nirikshe means I wish to see. I wish to see, put my chariot in such a position that I can observe the armies very closely. I want to see their faces. Now we are going to see the very change. When you see something from far away, you have one something in your mind. When you go near and see something, there comes a different vision in your mind. When Arjuna was standing far away, he could not see the faces of the Kauravas. To him, all the Kauravas appeared as enemies. He called them enemies. He called them He's going to use the word Durubuddhir in the next verse. Durubuddhir. Right? So he's very angry. His blood is boiling from far away. But when his chariot is moved close and he actually sees their face, then you see the change in him. So the word drishtva, to see, as we see Arjuna's vision changing, his internal thoughts are also changing. And we will see how raga, which is attachment, will rear its ugly head right now in the next few verses. So now he's telling Krishna, place my chariot in such a position that I can see the warriors very closely. And who are these warriors? Yodhu Kaman Avashtitan. Avashtitan means they are standing in front of me. Yodhu Kaman, they are prepared to fight with me. Now here again, there is another question of Arjuna's ego. He is saying they have come to fight with me. What about the rest of the Pandavas? Is he the only one who is going to fight with them? But his ego also is now getting very heated up. He's getting very angry. He's ready to kill them all. So he says, they have come to fight me. And not only have they come to fight me, he says, Kair Maya Saha Yodhavyam. I am also ready to finish them. So you can see Arjuna's blood already boiling. They have also come to fight me. I also have come to kill them. I want to see their faces up close. Who I have to do battle with. So his blood also is boiling. He is also getting angry. And also his ego is also arising also here. Which Krishna is very well aware what is happening. So Krishna is also going to play a very nice game here. We will see what Krishna is going to do. So now, in the next verse he says, these people, he calls the Dhatarashtra, you see the third line of verse 23, Dhatarashtrasya Durubuddhir. He calls all the supporters on the Kaurava side, he addresses them as Durubuddhir. Durubuddhir means the buddhi, intellect, is totally destroyed. Because he says even the people like Bhishma Pita, like Dronacharya, like Kripacharya, all these who are the intelligent people, how come they have decided to support the Kauravas? They know the Kauravas are adharmic. They know how much of problems the Kauravas have caused us. And yet they go and support all these people. So he says they all are devoid of intellect. They've got a twisted intellect. They cannot think carefully. And therefore, what is Arjuna saying here? That I don't care even if they are my relatives, my friends, whatever they are, because they are Duru Buddhir, they do not understand what is right, what is wrong, I am going to fight them. So Arjuna is very clear in his mind that irregardless of who is standing on the opposite side, he is going to fight. So he tells to Krishna that these people have come to support the Duryodhans, to support Duryodhan, because Yudde Priya Chikir Shava, they have come to support him in his war with us. So that means they are all my enemies. So up to these few verses, we find that everything is very clear, everything is very sharp in Arjuna's mind. But as this chariot is being driven closer and closer by Krishna, we will see the change slowly overcoming in Arjuna also. So now we will see what happens in verse number 24. So in verse number 24 now, Evam Ukto Rishikeshu. Rishikeshu means Krishna. Arjuna, having addressed Krishna, having given him the instructions, and here Rishikesha again, as I explained to you last time, the word Rishikesh means what? Sense, but what? Put together, what does it mean? Lord of the senses, right? Means what? Lord of the senses, when we call Krishna Rishikesha. What role does Krishna play in us? As Rishikesha, he is the indweller who gives consciousness to the senses and the mind. When we say senses, we include the mind. So he is the one providing the consciousness, and he is also the witness. So he plays two roles. He gives the consciousness to our whole body, because when Atman leaves the body is dead. And not only he gives a consciousness, but he is a witness to all our thoughts and all our actions. So that's why we also call him Karma Phala Data. You know what is Karma Phala Data? Karma is your action. Phala is your result of your action. Data means one who allocates the results of your action. That means we are rewarded or punished by who? By a result of our own actions. But what does God do? He records the plus and minus, and he in turn allocates the good or the bad reaction to you. So he is merely the allocator. He is not responsible for rewarding or punishing us. That's why I said he is the witness. He does not determine what you think. He does not determine what you do. He only allocates the result of your own actions. So here, Krishna being Rishikesho means he understands that there is one big, big, big flaw with Arjuna. And what is that flaw? And he is going to exploit that flaw. So Arjuna falls into a delusion. And because Arjuna falls into a delusion, he has to give him the Gita. And we also learn that that is also our biggest obstacle in spiritual growth.
Attachment.
Exactly. So a lot of people, sometimes they confuse attachment with love. What is the difference between attachment? You know, I had one student who came and told me, said they had a very favorite nephew. So the nephew came and told him, "Uncle, uncle, I love you a lot." Uncle said, "I don't love you. I don't love all of you." I said, "Why, uncle? Why you don't love us?" "Because I'm Gita student. I'm detached. My Gita teacher told me be detached." So what is the difference? That is not attachment. There is a difference between attachment and love. What is the difference? Very good. Attachment, there is another word for attachment. To understand the word attachment, one simple word.
Addiction.
We are addicted. So we are emotionally dependent on the person or the object or that experience. We always want it to be there. When it is not there, we feel disturbed. That is called addiction. That is called attachment. But love is giving. Whether you love me or not, I love you. So, who is the one we love the most in this world?
Ourselves.
Who is the one we love the most in this world? Ourselves, isn't it? So as long as people cater to my needs and wishes, I love them. If you don't go according to my needs and wishes, I don't love you. So that is unconditional. Whereas love is, sorry, that is conditional. Love is unconditional. So there is a difference between love and attachment. And yet this is the greatest paradox of our lives. What is the paradox? We have all kinds of people and relationships in our life. We have all kinds of objects in our life. We have all kinds of situations in our life. And yet we find we have conflict with almost everything. With people we have conflict. With relationships we have conflict. Husband and wife conflict. Parents and children conflict. In-laws conflict. Everywhere there is some amount of conflict. With the objects also you have conflict. What is your conflict? what I have, not good enough. I want something more. New model, latest thing, latest color, etc. So, what is the paradox here you can see? What I have, I live in conflict. I don't know how to manage this conflict. Day and night I'm having conflict. I go office, I got problem with my colleagues. Come back home, I got problem. You know, there was a story, there was this lady who used to have a lot of problems in her office. So every time she had problems in her office, she used to run to a drawer, open the drawer and take out a photograph and look at the photograph. And when she see the photograph, she'll cool down. She'll forget all the conflicts in the office. So every time her colleague see, she has a quarrel with the boss or with colleagues, she'll run back to her table, quickly open, take out a photo, look at the photo, then she is at peace. So they were very curious. They went to ask her. They said, tell us whose photo you have. Every time you see this photo, you get so relaxed. Is it some God photo? She said, no, 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 not God photo. Is it some film star, you know, Shah Rukh Khan or somebody like that? No, no, no. Is it, well, what, whose photo is it? She said, my husband's photo. Oh, they said, you must be having a very loving husband that you see his photo, that immediately all your, your agitation goes away. She said, no, on the contrary, it's opposite. I'm reminded of the trouble I have in the house, so this looks nothing to me at all. So every time I see his photo, I think, my God, there's even more worse trouble in the house. Better I stay in the office. So where are there no agitations? There is the paradox, and yet, what we live with is conflict, yet without them also we cannot live, isn't it? With them also we got conflict, without them also I cannot live. I must have my objects, I must have my people. No matter what the conflict, I also suffer. I don't have them, also I suffer. So therefore, what are the scriptures trying to tell us? How to live life in this world, not running away. I must learn how to live in this world, because Arjuna saw the conflict, he wanted to run away. What did Krishna tell him? Don't you dare run away. You must learn how to face your conflicts, not run away from your conflicts. So this is the message of the Gita. How do I live with people, objects and situations? And yet, I must also know that everything is temporary. Everything is going to go. Therefore, I must also prepare and know how to live without people, objects and situations. In both ways, I am equal-minded. With them, I'm okay. Without them, I'm also okay. Right? So, therefore, what the scriptures are telling us, do not look for happiness, security and peace of mind in the world, because the world itself is changing. And therefore, your peace of mind, your security, your happiness is also subject to ups and downs. It is not that there is no happiness in the world. There is. But it is subject to arrival and departure. So now the question will be, then what is the purpose of the world? If you say don't look for happiness in the world, then what is the purpose of all these people, relationships, objects? What is the purpose? What is the purpose of the world? Why did God create the world? To do your duty. And also, if you want food, where do you get it from? Well, you want shelter, take from the world. You want clothing, take from the world. You want opportunity to do seva, use the world. So the world is to be used for food, shelter, clothing. It is to be used for our opportunity to serve the world. It is to be used to gain education. But for happiness, don't lean on the world. Therefore, where should you lean for your happiness? On God or within yourself. So, our problem is what? Our problem is ignorance of this important fact. This very ignorance of us seeking happiness in the wrong direction has been the result of all our problems. So the main cause is ignorance, right? And since ignorance is the cause, what is the remedy? Only knowledge. Because if the problem is the room is dark, what do you do? You have to switch on the light. There's no other remedy. If ignorance is your problem, therefore remedy is knowledge. What is that knowledge? That is laid out for us in chapters 2 to 17 of the Gita. How to find peace with the world or without the world. Right? So now, Sanjaya addresses Dhritarashtra as Bharata in this very verse 24. And Bharata means descendant of this great Bharat dynasty. He's telling Dhritarashtra, look, you're not an ordinary person. You're a great, you're a descendant from this great Bharat dynasty. Why don't you wake up and do the right thing? Stop this war while you can. Right? It's a message Sanjaya is trying to send out to Dhritarashtra, that why don't you wake up and stop this war? You and you alone have the power to stop this war, but Dhritarashtra did nothing at all. Right? So now he addresses Arjuna as Gudakesha. Gudakesha is another beautiful word. It means conqueror of sleep. Gudakesha. So what does this word sleep here mean to us? Again, there's another message for us also. What do we mean by conqueror of sleep? What does this word sleep here mean to us? Not okay, delusion, which is coming from where? This, our sleep, our ignorance, our delusion means what? It's coming from where? Coming from the tamasic gunas. So it is tamasic gunas which cause our ignorance and cause our delusion. But Arjuna was not a tamasic person. He was above that. That's why he says he's a conqueror of sleep. That's why even our scriptures, if you look at Ramayana, they tell you about the gunas in a story form way. So who is the sattvic brother among the three? You know the three brothers, right? Who is the sattvic?
Vibhishan.
Why is Vibhishan the sattvic one? Don't know. Why is Vibhishan the sattvic one? Sattvic gunas means good gunas that make us do good things. So Vibhishan was the only one who advised Ravan not to fight. He said, you are doing the wrong thing. So when sattvic gunas are strong in us, they will guide us in the right way. Right? So Vibhishan represents sattvic guna. Who represents rajasic guna? Ravan. Why does Ravan represent rajasic gunas? Huh? He's bad. Rajasic gunas are bad. Why are they bad? They are bad, yes, true. When rajasic gunas overpower the... See, out of the three gunas, one guna will always overpower. When sattvic guna overpowers, you will come to Gita Ashram. When rajasic gunas overpower you... So, why is Ravan rajasic? Because rajasic nature is like this. Everything we have, no matter I have the best of everything, I have the best bungalow, best house, everything I have, my neighbor has bought a better car. One thing I don't have disturbs me. Right? Ravan had everything. He had kingdom of Lanka. He had riches. He had money. He had wealth. He had a beautiful wife. Everything he had. Ample food to eat. One thing he didn't have troubled him. Sita. One thing. That's all. Sita he didn't have. He troubled him. And because of Sita, he had to go kidnap her, bring her back, fight Ravan, and end up dying himself. Because of one thing he didn't have. True, but that is because Ram killed him. But we are not that fortunate to have Ram come and kill us. Not everybody is fortunate. So everybody cannot follow Ravan's way. Okay, so that is rajasic gunas in us. And what is tamasic gunas? The brother Kumbhakaran. Because 6 months sleeping, 6 months eating. And there is this story that goes that when Ram came to Lanka and killed Kumbhakaran, no, we have in our scriptures, there's one Devi who's always, or Deva who's in charge of everything. You know, like tree, there's one Deva, star, there's one Deva, moon, there's one Deva. So for sleeping also, there's one Deva called Nidra Devi. Okay, Nidra Devi. When you sleep, Nidra Devi is there. So when Kumbhakaran was killed, Nidra Devi was very upset. She went to Ram. She said, you killed my best customer. 6 months the fellow sleeps, I got somebody to rest with at least, isn't it? I got somewhere to, you know, to sleep also there. But now you killed him, where am I going to go for 6 months? So Ram said, don't worry, I will find you one excellent place where you will find lot of sleeping people. You know where? He found an excellent place for her. You have a lot of customers you will get there. Where? Huh? Where? Yeah, where lectures are given, no, that's where people fall asleep. Especially spiritual lectures. Okay, it's a joke, don't take it seriously. Okay, so this three gunas are there in us. So why did we come to the gunas? Oh yes, okay, guda kesha. So guda kesha here means one who has overcome sleep. Sleep here means tamasic. So Arjuna was not the tamasic type. He was ready to also, he was quite intelligent. He knew what he was doing. Up to now we can see. But what is it that is going to overpower the intelligence? That is what we want to know, right? So here we have a guda kesha, and he instructs, and Krishna takes his chariot to senayor ubayor madhye sthapayitva ratho tamam. Ratho means the chariot. Sthapayitva, place the chariot, senayor ubayor madhye, where Arjuna wanted the chariot to go, he parked the chariot, because Krishna was his sarathi, his charioteer. So he had to take instructions from Arjuna. So now in verse 25, Krishna does two very important things here. If Krishna had taken the chariot and parked it in front of Duryodhan and Karna, right? Arjuna's blood was already boiling. If he took the chariot and parked it right in front of Duryodhan and Karna, what would have happened? Dishum, 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 all fighting would have started, because his blood was already boiling. Place in front of these two people, he would have started the war. But Krishna deliberately took the chariot and parked it where? Bhishma Drona Pramukhataha. In front of Bhishma Pita and Dronacharya. The very people whom Arjuna loved, the very people whom Arjuna respected. So he pulls the reins and he brings the chariot to a total stop right in front of these two people. That is the first thing he did. Okay, and of course all the other kings from the various kingdoms who came to support the Bhishma Pita and all that, they were also around. So Sarvesham Cha Mahikshita. Mahikshita means all the rulers, they were also assembled there. But Arjuna's eyes were on who? Only on Bhishma Pita and Dronacharya. Okay. Now, so earlier what did he call them? When he saw from far away? Enemies, Duru Buddhir, you know, like, you know, you bang the table, Duru Buddhir, like, I was very angry, because said they are of twisted intellect, they don't know what they are doing. So now he comes face to face with these two people, and here Krishna does another very important thing. Vacha Partha, he told to Partha, meaning to Arjuna, Pashyetan, see what? Samavetan Kuru Niti, all the Kurus gathered here. So two very important things Krishna did. One, he parked the chariot in front of Bhishma Pita and Dronacharya. In fact, Krishna was not supposed to say anything, isn't it? You tell your driver, take me to supermarket. When he comes to supermarket, he doesn't tell you, here is the supermarket. Right? So when Krishna parked the chariot, he said what? Behold, all the Kurus gathered here. So what does this statement mean? Because it totally twisted Arjuna's mind. Kuru dynasty, from their descendants came the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Both the Pandavas and the Kauravas are descendant from that Kuru dynasty. If you recall in chapter 1, verse 1, what did Dhritarashtra say? Kuru Chetre, Dharma Chetre. Where this battle was going on was Kuru Chetre. This land belonged to King Kuru. And King Kuru from there descended the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Meaning, what is Krishna telling him here? These are all your own blood. These are not different people. These are not enemies. These are but your own flesh and blood. Because you are all descendant from the same family. So the minute he tells him this, now we are going to see Arjuna seeing the same army, the same vision, but now something inside him has got affected. So that raga which was there earlier, that attachment for Bhishma, Pita, Dronacharya did not pose any problem. All the while he came to battlefield, he was very clear. From far away he saw everything, he was very clear. The minute he came near and saw their faces, this attachment suddenly showed his ugly head. Right? And what does raga lead to attachment? Shoka, that is sorrow. What is that sorrow? When he realized that he had to kill these very people whom he loves. The very people whom he admires, he respects. And as he was seeing them, there must have been a flashback in his mind. He must have been started to think about all the good times they had together, isn't it? Like when we meet somebody, And then suddenly we think, you know, all the nice times, good times, and all these things come flashing back into Arjuna's mind. Because he played on Bhishma Pitta's lap. Bhishma Pitta was so loving to Arjuna, the way he brought him up. He was very much attached to him. How can I kill this very person who gave me so much of love and affection? How can I kill the very guru who taught me the art of warfare? How can I kill these two respected people? So immediately that shock has reached Arjuna. And now he cannot say anything. He is totally dumbfounded. So now the microphone passes back to Sanjaya. And Sanjaya has Divya Drishti. So that means not only can Sanjaya see what is happening on the battlefield. Where is Sanjaya? 100 kilometers away in Hastinapura. Not can only Sanjaya see what is happening on the battlefield, not can only he hear what is happening, but he can enter the minds of people also. So here now, although Arjuna is not saying anything, Sanjaya is reading his mind. This is what Arjuna is seeing now. He does not see Durubuddhir. He does not see adharmic people. He does not see people, what he said earlier, I want to see who has come to fight with me and who I am going to fight with. Now he does not see all that. Instead, what does he see? Now he starts mentioning what is going through Arjuna's mind. So, tatra pashyat. Pashyat again means see. So now this seeing at the close range has now totally changed Arjuna's total outlook of the war. So that means what? What does this mean to us also? Pashya, when he saw all this, Pitra means fathers, Pita Mahan, grandfathers, all these relatives, uncles, sons, all that. Now, when you say, all this is my family, you know, like sometimes you live in a joint family. Your brother, his brother, 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 four or five brothers staying, they get married with their wives, wives have children, children have grandchildren. Supposing you're all staying in one house, one family. What do you consider the children of your brothers? My children, right? The in-laws of your brother's in-laws becomes my in-laws, isn't it? Because I consider all as one family. So here, this is what Arjuna suddenly realized. When Krishna said, behold, the Kurus gathered, he said, my God, those people's children are actually my children. Those people's fathers are actually my fathers also, because we are all one family. So all this here description of Pitrin, Pitamahan, Acharya means teachers, Matulan is, I think, maternal uncles, right? All these in verses 26, 27, he's seeing friends, putran, children, pautran, grandchildren, all suddenly he realized are all but his own. So what is the message now that this is sending to us now? Earlier, far away, they are terrible people. Suddenly come near now, oh, they are all my own people. So means what? Don't judge a book by its cover. Very good. I like that. See, now he calls them in verse 27, last line, Sarva Bandun. Now they all become my beloved people suddenly. Earlier cursing them, telling them all kinds of names, suddenly come near now, oh, they are all my people only. Meaning what?
Attachment.
So, and where is this attachment? How does this attachment occur? You see, supposing you bought a new car and you park it outside your house and you're sitting down watching some TV and suddenly you hear a loud crash, boom, and then you say, my car, my new car, my new car. You run out, you're so distressed, you're worried, you're crying, and you run out and you see the lorry has banged your neighbor's car. Then what happens? So attachment is to what? To something which is near to you, which is belongs to you, which you consider is yours, isn't it? Attachment can never be for something which is far away, which you don't consider. If I tell you somebody in Japan said you are a liar, does it affect you? Who the fly, I don't care. Your neighbor said you are a liar. Immediately what happens? You get upset. That means when Arjuna was far away, there was no attachment. He saw all of them as enemies. The minute he saw Pashye, he saw the actual faces of Dronacharya and Bhishma Pitta, and that was whom he was attached to, suddenly the feeling of what we call here Sarva Bandun, suddenly they all became his beloved relatives. his beloved ones. And as we are going to see now, when this attachment now takes over and he realizes he has to kill them, that they are going to die. And imagine one thing, the war has not started, the killing has not started. Bhishma, Pita and Dronacharya are not dead, yet he is already crying. Meaning what? Why are we always crying? So we are always crying about what? There are only two things we always cry about. There are only two things we cry about. One is the past, which is dead and gone. You know, that fellow in 1983, you called me a donkey. Now 1995, I'm still remembering it. Right, the past, we are still carrying the past with us, right? And the other is the unborn future. So Swami Chinmayananda says, our mind is always in the dead past or the unborn future. So here, Bhishma Pita is alive. Dronacharya is alive. They have not died. Nobody has died. Yet, what is Arjuna doing? He is projecting what is happening in the future. So our attachment is like this also. Our attachments to things or people is, now they are with us, but we always worry how long they will be with us. So our attachment is not only losing something that makes us from raga go to shoka. When we are attached to something, we lose it. We go from attachment to sorrow. But even when we project also in the future, whether this person will love me, you know, one doctor was telling me that he sees a lot of cases of parents who get very mentally and emotionally troubled when their children grow up, leave and go overseas and don't contact them, right? So many cases he has seen, because there's such of attachment to their children that when they go overseas and then they just forget the parents, these parents cannot take it. So what happens is also we start projecting in the future. What happens if my children don't take care of me when I get old? This will happen, that. So that also brings nothing but agitation and worry to our mind, right? So where is your mind always? Either in the dead past or in the unborn future. So here also, because of this unborn future, Arjuna is envisioning that all these people are going to die, who are my beloved people, it starts to disturb him. So now we are going to see how raga becomes shoka. What are the symptoms of shoka? Verse number 28. And the word shoka here is given as the word kripaya in verse number 28. Kripaya. So one thing is here we must understand. Dan samiksha. Okay, one thing you must understand here, that to Arjuna now, killing is going to become a real sin, right? But if we look at it, no doubt the scriptures say that any scripture tells us that killing is a sin. We should not kill anything, right? But, and killing your own friends and relatives is an even bigger sin. But now Arjuna is really considering that killing here on the battlefield also is a sin. Now, if you look at our gods, you know, we have so many gods. What do they carry in their hands? They carry conch, right? What is a conch for? Why do the gods carry conch in their hand? Huh? Why do they start battle over here? What else? Why do they carry conch in their hand? Huh? To what? See, when the Panditji blows a conch, what is he telling us? Come and pray, isn't it? Come to God, right? So the conch is the God calling to you, come to the righteous path, okay? Then they hold lotus in your hand. So if you come to the right path, you get a lotus. But if you don't come to the right path, it takes the club and whacks you on the head. So they hold conch, they hold lotus. If you listen, okay. If you don't listen, one clonk on the head. So although our gods are symbols of compassion, yet they hold all kinds of weapons in their hand, isn't it? And people ask, why your gods are holding all his weapon, mace, this club, everything they hold in hand, so terrible. But if one has to protect dharma, can you protect dharma with a lotus? You need a weapon. So kshatriya, the word kshatriya means, it comes from two words, kshatrayate, which means to protect from hurt. The the object or a mission of a Kshatriya is to defend, is not to be an aggressor. So you have to protect. When the country is being attacked, you protect. So here, in order to protect, you need to have some violence, right? You need to use some violence, you need to use weapons. So can the highest command given in the scriptures is Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. The highest dharma, Paramo Dharma means highest dharma is what? Ahimsa, which means non-violence. Can a soldier go to the battlefield and say Ahimsa Paramo Dharma? No, it cannot work. So there is something called a universal law which we all follow. Don't lie, don't cheat, don't hurt people. But there is something called a specific law also. That changes from person to person, changes from time and place. So if you are in a home, the same soldier kills somebody on the battlefield, do we call him a murderer? The same soldier goes home, kills his neighbor, you call him a murderer. So time and place, duty also varies. So here is Arjuna falling slowly into his delusion. He is getting confused now. That killing my people is a sin. Not realizing that he has come for what purpose? For justice, to protect dharma. And in the course of dharma, it is a kshatriya's duty to take up arms. Right? So now we will see that what happens now, kripaya. And this is also why the scriptures say that before you use violence, you must try all peaceful means. When all peaceful means fail, then use violence. So Pandavas tried everything. They tried all means of peace. Kaurava said no. So they had to end up in war. So now, here he's saying now, this change in vision is happening in Arjuna. Kripaya. Kripaya here is translated as compassion. But again, as I told you, the word compassion is not correct. Because to have compassion, nothing is wrong. Isn't it? We should have compassion. We should have compassion for human beings, for animals, insects, etc. But here, what is the problem? Kripaya avishto. You see the word avishto means he was overpowered by compassion. So, they say, having emotions is a virtue, right? We're all human beings. We have emotions. We have love, hatred, kindness, anger, etc. We have. So having emotions is a virtue. But being emotional is a vice. You see the difference? Having emotions means I am a master of my emotion. I am in control of my emotion. Just like anger. I can use anger as a tool to discipline students, isn't it? But what is the difference between a guru having an anger and supposing a stranger having an anger? What is the difference? Sorry? Guru is in control of his anger, using the anger to control his students, right? So he is in full control. Whereas other people, they are overpowered by anger. You know what's the definition for anger? What is the definition for anger? It is called temporary insanity. Isn't it? That moment you lose your anger, it overpowers you. Then you do things, you say things that you would not normally say or do. And then after your anger goes down, what do you say? Why did I say that? Why did I throw this chair? Why did I throw this thing? Right? So it is temporary insanity. So here, compassion overpowering means what? Where does compassion come from? From the mind. Right? Mind is a emotional, is a bunch of emotions. Mind is emotions. All the likes and dislikes, raga, dvesha, come from the mind. What is the intellect? It's rational. It is right or wrong. So many people also don't understand the difference between this. The simple way to understand difference between intellect and mind is this. Supposing I'm a diabetic, okay? And I love, sorry to diabetics here, but I love sweets. I love to eat chocolate and sweets. So you put a bowl of chocolates in front of me. I love to eat. That is coming from my mind. But what should be telling me that no, you better don't eat because it is harmful to you? That should be your intellect. So the intellect has always got to check the mind. If the intellect is weak, number one, or number two, it is overpowered by the mind, then what happens? It is just like a person who smokes. When you smoke the first cigarette, what do you say? Only one cigarette, isn't it? No problem. No? So what happens? The intellect justifies to the mind, okay, go ahead. It's only one cigarette. Then next day you smoke two, and then three, and then five, and then 10, and then what happens?
Addicted.
Now you get addicted, which means what? Your mind has overpowered the intellect. The intellect, when it allows things to go on and on, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker. So you allow the first act to be wrong, and the second act, and the third act, by the time your intellect is no more working. So Arjuna's case was like that. Although he was aware of what he was doing, but at that moment, raga came from the mind, that attachment. And the thought of losing his beloved ones who are going to die resulted in shoka. This raga shoka now overpowers the intellect. So now he cannot think carefully. Now is going to come the third problem, which is called moha. So raga to shoka to moha. So we are going to see that happening, but we already come to our lesson end. So I will stop here. And just to let you all know that the Gita Jayanti program is coming. In this program, for those who are new to the Gita Ashram, is when all the 18 chapters of the Gita, day by day, one chapter will be recited, the Sanskrit verse, and an explanation on that chapter will be given. So, in English, yes, in English. And we, yeah, if there is Hindi commentary, there will be an English translator. So, the 18 days will start on the 15th of November, okay, which is a Saturday, and will go on till the second of December, 18 days, and you have an opportunity to get an overview of the Gita. We will be also, we are fortunate to have Guru Ma from Delhi. She's a walking encyclopedia of the Gita, and she will be here for the early chapters. And we as a Thursday class, normally every chapter one family sponsors. So as a Thursday class, it has been our tradition every year to sponsor one chapter. And this year we've decided to sponsor chapter 6 because Guru Ma will be here. She will give the commentary. So there is some cost involved, and as usual, all of us chip in to give some money, collect that money to pay for the dinner that is hosted that day. Some prasadam is given, and the leftover money, whatever the surplus, is donated to the ashram. Right? So it, again, there is no force, it's up to you all. You all want to give, it's up to you. But as I say, we are using the facilities of the ashram, the electricity, water, etc. There is something at least we also should pay back, right? So just consider about it, keep the dates free, because for those who are new to the Gita, it is going to give you a rare opportunity in 18 days to have a total bird's eye view of the Gita. Okay? Membership forms, those who want to become members, please contact Dato Patichan. And yeah, Anjana here is recording all the talks, as you know, and they've posted.